You are Locked On Balls, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, good Monday morning, everybody. Welcome into Locked On Balls. It's your team every day. I'm your host, Harry Kane, at underscore Kaner on Twitter, at Locked On Balls, and hope you guys are rested, recovered, and ready to get after this new week. I know I am. A new episode every single morning when you wake up here for Locked On Balls. Today's episode, it's brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. Big show coming up for you on a Monday. Going to discuss a new Tennessee commit that happened over the weekend, tied in and Brody Foley. Segment 2, Ryan Shumpert, having it on the program a couple of times, FallQuest.com. Now working a little bit for the Tennessee Smokies. He will join us in segment number 2 to break down a series sweep for Tennessee baseball on the road at Missouri and that showdown coming up next weekend, or this coming weekend rather, against Arkansas. And in segment number 3, a couple of offensive notes for Tennessee football. Just how different will this Tennessee football team look offensively compared to what we've seen the past 3 years? It's not going to be, again, flip of the switch and it's completely different, but it's going to get there. It's going to be completely different, and we will discuss that in segment number 3. Want to remind you guys, Twitter Tuesday coming up tomorrow. Get those tweets in, get those questions in, DMs, any question, any comments you have about this Tennessee football team, basketball team, whatever the case may be. Get them in there at underscore Kaner at Locked On Vols. Friday afternoon, I set up a link tree, and if you guys don't know what a link tree is, you click on a link, and then it takes you to a website page, and all the different ways that you can listen to this podcast: Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. There's some listening platforms I didn't literally even know existed, but I put them on there. All my social, all the social media you can find for this podcast, all that is in one link. I've linked it to my Twitter bio at underscore Kaner. I've linked it to Locked On Vols at Locked On Vols. And I will tweet it out each and every day with the episode. So if you ever want to find a different listening platform, or if you need to know where you can listen, you click on that link tree and you can find every available avenue to listen to this podcast. I'm going to start sharing that each and every day. So without further ado, let's get into it. This is a Monday Locked On Vols. So it was Saturday morning, well, Saturday afternoon, really about 12 o'clock Eastern time, and Tennessee picked up its fourth commit for the class of 2022 in Brody Foley. Brody Foley is a tight end from Cincinnati, Ohio, 6'6", 230 pounds, of course, class of 2022, a big body tight end that has really fallen in love with Tennessee and this coaching staff here in the last month. He's a three-star. He's the 32nd rated player at his position per Rivals. He's the 21st rated player in the state of Ohio per Rivals. He has a 5.7 Rivals rating. And Brody Foley is a guy that has been down to Tennessee twice in the month of April. He first came down, and, you know, Cincinnati's only about 4 hours away, and really where Brody Foley lives, it's kind of on this side of that interstate, or closer up the interstate, rather, and it's closer to Knoxville, only about 3.5 hours away. And so a little bit of a trek, but not too far. And so Foley came down twice in the month of April, watched that Tennessee open practice that I was at, and you might have been at as well, and then came back down as well for the spring game. Now, FaceTime, Zooms, virtual visits, text messaging, that's all great. Brody Foley still has not talked to these coaches in person. He's not seen these facilities up close in person outside of just sitting in the stands of Neyland Stadium. Hasn't seen the locker rooms, hasn't seen the cafeteria, anything like that. But just felt like this was home, felt like this is the place he needed to be. And in talking with his coaching staff, Alex Golish was so critical in his recruitment. Alex Golish, of course, the offensive coordinator for Tennessee, but the tight ends coach, and very much wants the tight ends to be involved in this offense. And Brody Foley is a guy that he believes down the road can do just that. I had a chance to catch up with Brody Foley, and I posted that story at VolQuest.com over the weekend when he committed on Saturday, and just said, you know, talking with Coach Golish, Coach Heupel, and really all the offensive coaches, this is where I want to be. These are the people I want to be around. These are the people I want to help, you know, grow me, mature me into the man I want to be. Not only the football player I want to be, but the man I want to be as well. And so that was really the be all end all for me in Tennessee. I wanted to be around this coaching staff. And so chalk that up as a dub for Josh Heupel and Alex Golish. Job well done. And I think this is a guy that can really pay dividends for Tennessee down the road. Now, he's a developmental player. Of course, he's got to continue to grow and get stronger and learn this offense and all that. He's not a guy, I believe, right now that can step foot on campus and contribute, but that's okay. Hardly any players are, if we're being completely honest. Henry Tuotuo was obviously the news almost simultaneously, by the way, with this commit, early Saturday afternoon, deciding to elect to go to Alabama. And we'll discuss some of that on tomorrow's podcast, likely. But not everybody's Henry T that can set foot on campus and play right away. Just not. I mean, it even took Jalen Hyatt a little bit to kind of get his legs under him and start contributing. You saw his role grow more and more as the season went on last year. So Brody Foley's a projected player, and as he continues to develop and continues to work, I think that he's a guy that Alex Golish will like to play around with. So how does he fit in with Tennessee? Well, after this season, of course, Brody Foley has a senior season coming up. Tennessee's going to lose Princeton Fant. Tennessee's going to lose Austin Pope. Tennessee will have Jacob Warren and Miles Campbell as tight ends. Trinity Bell is a guy that's in this 2021 signing class. Julian Nixon is as well. Bell is a tight end but could play defense. Nixon is listed as a tight end but will likely play wide receiver. We'll have to see how those guys figure into the mix. But there will be a need at tight end for sure, because Tennessee wants to have two or three that can play right away. And so Brody Foley can potentially step in there once Fant and Pope leave. I think in viewing the spring game, Princeton Fant was targeted, had a big game. I think he had five receptions for nearly 60 yards. Tennessee threw a touchdown to a reserve tight end there near the goal line. And Alex Golish loves to use his tight ends on the goal line. You look at Central Florida's tight end in 2020, Jake Heascock. And he's 6'7", big guy, like Foley. He had 19 catches, 140 yards, five touchdown receptions. You look at in 19 catches, five touchdown receptions. That's not bad. And he had three touchdowns in 10 receptions the year before that. What that means is Alex Golish loves to use the tight ends in the red zone. And you saw a little bit of that in the spring game as well. And so Foley, being a big body guy, has that size and that frame to be utilized just like that. So I think that's pretty good. If you look at his stats in high school, nothing's going to blow you away from his junior year. 25 receptions, 233 yards, and one touchdown. But the fact that he is big, he's athletic enough to run with DBs and get away from them. He can absolutely get away from a linebacker. His strength to push those guys off him, run crisp routes. He's a good blocker as well. In my conversation with him, he even described himself. I asked for a comparison, rather. He didn't just come out and say this. I asked for a comparison. Said, hey, kind of who's a guy in the National Football League that you try to mold your game after, or you think you exemplify a little bit of the characteristics that guy might exemplify? He said Rob Gronkowski, and the fact that he is a two-way player, obviously great on the receiving end, but he's a force as a blocker, at the point of attack and getting the tackle or the defensive end or the linebacker out of the way on some outside zone reads. And so I think that'll be big for Brody Foley down the road. But Tennessee now has its fourth commit for the class of 2022 in Brody Foley. And Brody Foley joins the likes of course, Taven Jackson. You've got Elijah Herring and Vincent Sneed in that recruiting class. Of course, Tennessee continues to hit the transfer portal very, very quick and effectively, bringing in Joseph Milton, of course, Caleb Tremblay. You had Javonte Payton at the end of last week and Juwan Mitchell. I think Tennessee's not done there just yet. I think Tennessee's going to bring in at least one more player, maybe more down the line, but some blue shirts will probably have to come into play if you bring in more than one, but we'll have to see how it all plays out. But Tennessee, Brody Foley, fourth commit for the 2022 class, and it's going to start getting crazy, guys. I think May you'll see a couple more potentially, but once you get those officials in on campuses in June, July, this summer, it's going to be big. It's going to be big for Tennessee and for a lot of other schools as well. All right, we've got Ryan Shepherd coming up in segment number two, some more football notes in segment three, but not before I remind you guys about BetOnline. Fastest, easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season, Atlanta Braves. I know I always use them as an example, but I watch the Braves every single night, okay? I'm an old man, and I love it. All right, Atlanta Braves were on ESPN, had that broadcast with A-Rod, who sucks anyway, on that broadcast last night, and I was watching them, and I hit my total number, all right? And so and I did that at BetOnline, and you can too with any baseball game, any basketball game, any stick and ball sport out there. Of course, you had the Kentucky Derby a few weeks ago, some big news regarding the winner of that race for the first leg of the Triple Crown, but those are coming up here later on in the coming weeks and in coming months. And so you can get in on that action at BetOnline. all the latest news, odds, and information for your sporting needs, okay? Before the next pitch, head on over to BetOnline on your laptop or your mobile device, check out all the great sporting news, and sign up for the bonuses and the contesting information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in and play and win you some money at betonline.ag. Head on over to the website or use that mobile device. Sign up today. Receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. If you deposit $100 on that first deposit, you're going to get $50 back completely free just for playing, all right? Promo code Locked On to get all that at BetOnline. It's your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back into Locked On Vols here on a Monday morning. Another sweep for the Tennessee baseball team, and bringing in back onto the show Ryan Shumpert, who covers Tennessee baseball for VolQuest Rivals. Ryan, 37-11 now on the year, 17-7, coming off a weekend sweep of a Missouri team that's pretty down this year, but nonetheless, just another good showing for Tennessee baseball. What did you see this weekend? What was good on the diamond? Kind of a come from behind, kind of had to grind it out on Friday night, but Saturday and Sunday, two blowout wins.
Yeah, it's still astounding to hear those numbers, just how far this program's come in a few years, and a pretty business-like weekend for Tennessee. Missouri is pretty clearly the worst team in the SEC, and Tennessee didn't play great in that Friday night game, as you mentioned. I think they made four or five outs on the base pass, went 2-12 with runners in scoring position. But Missouri threw the kitchen sink at him. Starting pitcher really labored, threw over 110 pitches. They threw their best arm out of the bullpen right after him. He threw 59 pitches, and then their second best arm out of the bullpen after him, and he threw 53 pitches. So Tennessee made Missouri work throughout the game, and then Max Ferguson had the big go-ahead home two-run home run in the eighth inning to finally give Tennessee its first lead of the weekend. And from there, Tennessee didn't look back. You felt pretty confident where Tennessee was at for the reasons I just said, with Missouri having to use so many of their better arms on Friday night. And I think you kind of saw that manifest the rest of the weekend. Tennessee's starting pitching was solid, its bullpen was really good, and their bats just consistently put the pressure on Missouri, scoring 11 runs in a Saturday win, and then 10 runs in a comfortable Sunday win to clinch the series sweep.
Now, Ron, how are some of these guys like Max Ferguson, who started off the season slow but has started picking up lately? Connor Pavlone, who I know has been banged up a little bit of late as well. He was swinging a better bat, certainly compared to how he began the season. How have those type of guys in this lineup that still probably hasn't reached its full potential, I mean, that says a lot about what this team is. How have those type of guys bounced back as the season's gone on?
Tony Vitello makes it pretty simple when he talks about it. He says it's just those guys being themselves. He thought that with the preseason accolades, Max Ferguson was a preseason All-American. Connor Pavlone, I think, was on one or two sites and was a consensus first-team All-SEC player. He kind of thought those guys tried to do too much early in the year and kind of got outside of themselves. And he says you're starting to see them be who they are, just kind of comfortable in their role, doing what they need to do. And that's been a big message he's had kind of across the board for guys. This is a lineup that's really good, 1-9. You don't have to try to do too much just because you're hitting it. It's one spot in the order, hitting in the cleanup spot, hitting in three spot. That doesn't mean you have to do all the load. Just keep things moving. This is a good offense, top to bottom. And I think that's kind of what you've seen from those guys. Connor Pavlone, Drew Gilbert, who's a guy who was red hot at the beginning, really cold for a month or so stretch in SEC play, who's starting to turn it back on. You're seeing those guys just kind of be themselves. And because of that, you're seeing Tennessee's offense start to get closer to being its best, because top to bottom, 1-9 right now, they've been really solid the last few weeks. And their 1-4 probably isn't as good as the top couple teams in the SEC, the Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Florida's. But their 1-9 is really solid when it's clicking like it is the past few weeks. Those guys at the back of the lineup can hit for power, they can hit for contact, and you're kind of starting to see Tennessee's offensive identity, I think, take shape.
All right, so the Vols dropped their only series to date, three-game series in the SEC to Vanderbilt about a month ago, won a series at College Station against A&M, won a series over Kentucky, the sweep against Missouri. The lull is now over. You've got a midweek against Tennessee Tech. Then you've got 1-1, Tennessee playing at home against Arkansas, a monster series coming up this weekend. Got the final week, the final midweek tune-up against Belmont, and then at South Carolina. These next two series, very pivotal for Tennessee in terms of positioning heading into the tournament play.
Yeah, it's twofold, because first you just look at the SEC race, and it's kind of incredible that Tennessee's here. It's 2 weeks to go, and they have as good as a chance as anybody to win not just the SEC East, but to win the SEC. And that starts with, like you said, 1-1, top team in the East playing the top team in the West this weekend with Arkansas Arkansas is the number one team in the country. They haven't lost a series all year long, and it should be a really exciting weekend of baseball at Lindsey Nelson Stadium because, one, just for those reasons I mentioned, and then you throw in the fact Arkansas, where Tony Vitello was before he came to Tennessee, the Razorbacks have the best lineup, not only in the conference, but in the country. They just can absolutely crush the ball 1 through 9. So it should be a really, really exciting weekend for Tennessee. And then you look at it the other fold, this Thursday or Friday, the NCAA will announce 20 possible regional hosts. I would be just astonished if Tennessee was not in that. And then when the season ends, the normal selection Monday, you will have the 16 regional hosts, which is normal, but you'll also have the 8 super regional hosts announced ahead of time. So I think that's kind of the other thing you have to look at if you're Tennessee. And I think that's why sweeping Missouri was so huge this weekend. It kind of gives Tennessee a little bit of a comfort level if they don't have their best 2 weekends. Obviously, that's not what the Vols want to see as they're competing for the SEC championship. But they could drop a game to Arkansas, you know, go 3-3 these last 2 weekends and still, I think, be in a good spot to be a top 8 team and host a super regional for the first time in a really long time in Knoxville.
Yeah, Ron, we've talked about that before. That's why these series against Alabama, LSU, Georgia, kind of to kick off SEC play, kind of, you know, gave Tennessee some room to work with if you are to go 3-3 over this stretch, which, again, a very challenging stretch. You don't have to go in too depth, but how does Tennessee match up with Arkansas? I mean, 1-1, this is going to be a national stage, the series in college baseball this weekend. How does Tennessee match up, you know, Friday night starters on throughout the weekend, lineup versus lineup?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting series from Tennessee's pitching against Arkansas hitting. I mentioned Arkansas, best hitting team, best lineup in the country probably. And what they do best is they hit the long ball. And you look at if Tennessee's pitching has had a weak spot this year, it's been that tendency to give up home runs because Tennessee's whole MO is we're going to throw the ball in the strike zone and we're going to play good defense behind it and you're going to have to beat us. And, you know, there's really good hitters in the SEC. It's the best conference in the country. So there have been guys that can beat Tennessee that way. And this is going to be an example of that this weekend. How does Tennessee adjust to playing teams that hit so many home runs? And then you look at Arkansas's pitching. It's been good, but the consistency hasn't been there week in and week out. They've had some frustrating weekends, some poor performances, and it's kind of been sprinkled across their weekend starters. It hasn't, you know, just been one weak guy or something like that. So not necessarily elite arms for Arkansas, but good arms, and I think it's going to be a good challenge for Tennessee because the last 3 weekends, you said it against Texas A&M, Kentucky, and Missouri, Tennessee's offense has just been lights out. I think scored double-digit runs in 5 of those 9 games, maybe just 4 of those 9 games. So can continue Tennessee carry that over in really competitive games, not just score double digits when you're winning the game by 7 or 8 runs? Can you do that when the other – or, you know, close to that when the other team's putting up big numbers in the stage is the brightest against the number 1 team in the country.
Last thing I got for you here, Ron, and we'll chat again before the season's over, certainly heading into the postseason, but and I know you can't really answer this. You don't have the answer to this, and you can't answer it really in like 30 seconds to a minute, but teams are going to be coming after Tony Vitello this offseason. There's no doubt about it. A&M is going to be coming after him, some other programs around the country for sure. Kind of what's your gut feeling? I mean, I know Tennessee is going to have to do some things from an administrative perspective, giving some raises to assistants. Obviously, the facility upgrades, you know, that's an ongoing conversation. But kind of what's your gut feeling right now, Vitello in Tennessee? And, you know, will Tony Vitello kind of be here next season? In your opinion, right now, obviously, things can change.
Yeah, it's going to be when the college baseball season ends, you know, it's not like basketball and football where it's immediate. Here's the way too early top 25, but that's kind of, it's going to be season ends and Tennessee fans are still going to be tuned in because of the Tony Vitello situation. And, you know, my gut says, I think Tony Vitello likes Knoxville and likes being at Tennessee more than maybe some people would think in the national media. But at the end of the day, I think it's a business decision for him. And it's going to be all about those things you said, raising his salary, raising his staff salary, which I think is probably just as important as anything. And then the facility upgrades to Lindsey Nelson Stadium, obviously, the Smokies potentially moving back to Knoxville kind of makes that whole situation interesting. Because I know Danny White has talked to Tony Vitello about what do you think about playing all our home games at this new ballpark. I don't think that's Tony Vitello's preference, but it's going to be really interesting. My gut would say, you know, I would give it over 50-50 chance of Tony Vitello being back at Knoxville and back at Tennessee next year. But I think some of that just depends on the jobs that are open. Obviously, the Texas A&M job is kind of the big one that everyone's pretty confident is open. Not to say he wouldn't go there, but I feel like Tennessee would be able to keep him from going there. Missouri's another job that may be open, obviously his alma mater, but that program's in not the best place, as we saw this weekend, and its facilities are kind of like Lindsey Nelson Stadium, and it can use some work. So also, does LSU come open? That's, to me, is the massive question. LSU's probably the best, if not one of the two or three best jobs in the SEC, and Mike Bianchi's is on the hot seat. They've kind of been able to pull it together, but it will be really interesting. I guess my roundabout answer to that question is, I think more than people would think, I think Tony Vitello is happy in Knoxville and thinks he can win big at Tennessee, which might not be the perception from the national media.
Well, you know, here on this podcast, we're going to hold you to it. So if he leaves, then we're all going to blame you, right?
Yeah. Everyone can send their angry mail and their angry Twitter DMs to me if Tony Vitello leaves this offseason.
That was Ryan Shumpert. FallQuest.com does a great job covering Tennessee, contributing to that website, and really filling a niche here for a top five, top six-ish baseball team in the country. Tennessee baseball continues to climb and does great work. We will tie a bow on this Monday show on the other side, but not before I tell you about my friends at Built Bar. Built Bar, 9 delicious flavors, plus the occasional limited time only flavors. And when you talk to people who consume Built Bars, they're always going to tell you about their favorite flavors. Coconut, coconut almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie. You got double chocolate, peanut butter brownie, salted caramel. There's something for everybody. And if you don't know what your favorite flavor is, then you need to go ahead and order the mix box and figure it out for yourself. They are all for the health conscious guy or gal. Most flavors have 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, and only 4 grams of net carbs. That's getting it done right there. Last weekend, this is probably not super healthy, but I was on the go, and it was about 8 o'clock at night, and I hadn't had dinner yet, and I knew I didn't want to eat any later than that, and I wasn't in position to eat dinner, and so I grabbed a Built Bar, cookies and cream, my go-to Built Bar, had it. It was perfect for me, and I'm not saying that you should use that as a meal supplement, but it's what I did, and it was all I needed. So I got my protein that I needed. It was very filling. It was 100% chocolate. It tastes like a candy bar. It was perfect, but it was good for me, and that's what you can get at BuiltBar.com right now. If you go on and you order you a box or a mix box, use the promo code LOCK15, you'll get 15% off your first order. Promo code LOCK15 for 15% off your order at BuiltBar.com. Check them out. Now we got a final segment here on a Monday, Locked On Vols. Reminder, guys, Twitter Tuesday coming up tomorrow, @_Kane or @LockedOnVols. Tweet me, DM me, get me in your questions or comments, and we will discuss them on tomorrow's show. So I'll put a piece up there at VolQuest.com on Sunday. I'm sure some of you guys might have read it. If you haven't, we'll give you the Cliff Notes version here. And I wanted to kind of break down some of Alex Golish's comments, you know, and I love this, man. I'm going to make fun of it, but know my heart here. I love it. I truly do. I love the access that Josh Heupel gave us in the media to his assistant coaches this spring. I want it. I need it. Let's continue it. That's a good program. That's good leadership. But Alex Golish, man, he loves to talk, all right? He will be asked, I don't know, maybe 5 questions, and brother will talk for 20 minutes. But hey, I love it. It's tons of content. Weeks later, we're bringing that content here on this podcast again because we can recycle. So I wanted to go back and pull some of his comments from the last we spoke to him just ahead of the spring game back there and there on spring practice. It was actually April 22nd, and I wanted to write a story on it, and I wanted to discuss the tempo and how Tennessee's offense is going to be changing under Josh Heupel and Alex Golish compared to where it was with Jim Chaney, Tyson Helton, and of course under Jeremy Pruitt's regime. So a couple of notes I wanted to share for you guys, and again, I put it in this article at VolQuest.com on Sunday morning. At UCF, Tennessee's new skipper, again, I'm just reading my writing right now, which Josh Heupel, was second in the nation, trailing only Kent State, who played 4 games in 2020, with an average of 568 yards per game in 2020. With Golish aboard in 2020, remember, he was not there prior to the 2020 season, but with Golish aboard this past fall, the Knights ran 85 plays on average a game. That was up from 78 plays per game in 2019, in 75 games per play, or 79 plays per game, excuse me, in 2018. So let me reset that again. In 2020, UCF averaged 85 plays a game. In 2019, UCF averaged 78 plays per game. In 2018, UCF averaged 75 plays per game. During the same time with Jim Chaney at the helm of the offense here in Knoxville, Tennessee averaged 66 plays a game in 2020, 63 plays a game in 2019, and just 59 plays a game under Tyson Helton in 2018. Now, we've seen Jim Chaney be successful every stop he's been at, okay? I truly don't believe Jim Chaney was allowed to do exactly what he wanted to do in terms of philosophy and schematics and all that type of stuff. Do I think Jeremy Pruitt was calling plays? No. That's some people are going to make that argument. Well, if Jeremy Pruitt wasn't calling plays, we'll have to see what Tennessee's offense could have really done. No, Jeremy Pruitt was not calling plays, okay? But Jeremy Pruitt is the head football coach. And Pruitt said, hey, I want to do this. I want this to be our MO. I want you to do this. And Jim Chaney, I'm going to give you $1.5 million to do it. And then I'm going to give you a raise to $1.6 million in year two to do it. You want to come do that? Okay. Tyson Helton, I'm going to give you $1 million to run what I want you to run on offense. You want to do it? Okay, sign me up. I believe that's what was happening here in Knoxville under the Jeremy Pruitt regime offensively. So, was it great? No, it was a bad product. I think that it had a combination with the schematics. I think it had a combination of play calling. And overall, just the talent, I believe, just wasn't great. Of course, quarterback play was awful. All right, Tennessee's not had adequate quarterback play since... I mean, I'm just talking about adequate since Josh Dobbs. Not everybody's going to be Josh Dobbs in the college realm, but I mean, I'm talking about adequate. And Tennessee's not had a quarterback that can just do the job since Josh Dobbs. And obviously, that is a big reason why Tennessee's offense has struggled. We'll go on to some more notes here. Again, this is nitpicking some of my article I put at VolQuest on Sunday morning, discussing, you know, some of the plays and the tempo here for Tennessee the past couple years. Now Tennessee, what we're looking forward to moving forward. In 2020, Tennessee's offense ranked 104th in the country of FBS with 27 minutes and 56 seconds of average time of possession per game. That's not good. UCF was six slots lower than that, ranked 110th in the country at 27 minutes and 30 seconds on average of time of possession per game. Now, that's the whole thing about why I don't like up-tempo, hurry-up offense, because you are not shrinking the game whatsoever. You are extending the game. UCF, I just read you off the stats, second in the country, only to a team that played four games of 500-and-whatever yards per game, and the average, and you ran 85 plays per game in 2020. That's incredible. That's great stuff. But you didn't take time off the clock. And so for preference, for me personally, I don't much like that. But it was effective, therefore it was all right. Your defense is going to be charged with playing more snaps. That's part of it. But if you're effective, you know, ranking this low in time of possession category is not that big of a deal if you're scoring points. But here's the issue. If you're not scoring points, if you're having some quick three and outs, if you're not moving the football, that's when it becomes an issue. And so that's the big risk with an up-tempo, hurry-up offense and with Josh Heupel and his scheme. When it's clicking, it's great. Why hold on to the football when you go score in two or three plays or five or six plays or seven or eight plays if it's quick in and moving the change? That's okay. No one's going to argue about that. But when it's not clicking, and say in 2021, Tennessee ranks 107th in the country in time of possession with, I don't know, maybe averaging, maybe possessing the football an average of 27 minutes and 47 seconds per game in 2021. If Tennessee's scoring 33 points a game, I think that's okay. If Tennessee is scoring 24 points a game, that's not good. Keep in mind, Tennessee's only been scoring 21 to 22 points per game since Jeremy Pruitt has been here at head coach the last three seasons. So that's a little bit of improvement, but that's not enough improvement, especially in this up-tempo offense. So it's going to be completely different, and I'm intrigued to see. I think Tennessee's got talent to run it. I think if Tennessee finds a quarterback that can run this offense, I think the offensive line is going to be just fine. I think the playmakers around it, wide receiver and running back, is going to be just fine, and I think it's going to be fun to watch. Now, is that going to mean Tennessee's going to win 8 or 9 games? I don't think so, because I still think there's so many holes on this team, specifically on defense as well, and certain depth personnel issues on offense and certainly defense, but I think it'll still be fun to watch. It'll be completely different. My point is, Tennessee's offense is evolving. It's going to look completely different from what it did in 2018, 2019, and 2020. 2021 is not going to be the end product, but it's going to be on its way. And then hopefully, if things go the way that Josh Heupel hopes and Tennessee fans hope, 2022 and beyond, it's going to be a machine that's just clicking on all cylinders. So we'll have to see. I found that very, very interesting in terms of how many plays per game Tennessee was running during the span while Josh Heupel and Alex Golish were doing the same thing at UCF, time of possession battles, and of course, total offense completely different. So found that very interesting. If you want to read the complete article again, VolQuest.com, I posted the Fast and the Furious on VolQuest.com Sunday morning. That'll do it here for a Monday show, guys. Had a whole lot of fun. Really, really do appreciate you guys for tuning in. Got a special guest joining the show on Tuesday morning. We will speak a little bit more about some transfers coming in, transfers going out, all that noise. So it's going to be a big week coming up here on Locked On Vols. Hey, as soon as we're done here in just a couple of seconds, head on over to the Locked On Today podcast. Give Peter Bukowski a listen. He updates you on the news of every major sport, and you're going to hear from a lot of us around the network as well. You can follow the Locked On Today podcast, our flagship show, the Locked On Podcast Network, on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Guys, gals, I do appreciate it. Get those Twitter Tuesday questions, comments in, and we'll do it again tomorrow. Until then, have a great rest of your Monday, everybody.